Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
When you're down and
we're back. It's 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for joining us. James R. Copeland is the director of the Center for Legal Policy at the Manhattan Institute. He's our new friend. He's going to talk to us about trial lawyers, what they're up to these days, and some work that he's been doing on exposing some of the tactics, some of the practices that they've been conducting of late. And Jim Copeland, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jim.
It's good to have you here. Jim, one of the things that, as you know, as a small business owner and as somebody who advocates for small business, trial lawyers have popped up on our radar screen over the last several years as certainly not being friendly for small business. And what I'd like for you to do is talk to us about some of the work you've been doing with regard to observing what this group of professionals have been up to.
Sure, Jim. What we recently released was a report, Trial Lawyers, Inc., which is a report on the lawsuit industry in America 2003. It's somewhat like an annual report of the litigation industry, really looking at the business model, the size of this industry, the main lines of business of what we call Trial Lawyers, Inc. And the notion here is to get good information in people's hands. You know, your viewers can log into the website, www.triallawyersinc.com, download this information. And what we found when we looked at it was, first of all, a massive business, and second of all, a sophisticated business model. So we've got a business here when you look at the litigation industry, and we're talking about just the plaintiff's lawyers, not the defense lawyers, and we're just talking about a section of what the plaintiff's lawyers actually earn, really. It's a conservative estimate. We're talking about a business that brings in over $40 billion a year, which is 50% more than Microsoft or Intel, and twice as much as Coca-Cola. So you're talking about a really huge business.
That's an amazing number. Has anybody ever published that number before?
Not in quite that fashion. Now the number we derive from estimates of the cost of the tort tax or the size of the U.S. economy that goes to the tort system, which is done by Tillinghast Towers Perrin, and they've also got a percentage of money going to the plaintiff's industry that they derive. So our number is derived from other estimates, but no one's really looked at it that way. And what we wanted to do was compare high growth, high margin businesses like Microsoft, Intel, Pfizer to the trial lawyers business, and what we find is trial lawyers business is growing faster and bringing in more cash.
The second aspect of this is
a sophisticated business model that they market aggressively, not only on TV, radio, print media, phone books, etc., but they market aggressively through the internet, soliciting plaintiffs. People can sign up for $5 a month and become lead plaintiffs in major class action suits, etc. They've got mature, high growth, research and development, experimental types of business lines. They're the largest political donors of any industry. So what you have is a very, very big business. And the myth that the plaintiffs bar likes to paint of itself, that they're out protecting the little guy against big bad business, is really just that, a myth. And small business owners in particular are fairly helpless to fight back against the monstrosity of Trial Lawyers, Inc. What you have, I was talking to someone yesterday who owned a $10 million business, has been bankrupted by asbestos suits. This business has been responsible for years. They came out with warnings unilaterally before anyone else did. But because of that, they found themselves a target. And in sector after sector after sector, the trial lawyers are bringing their war chests into bear. The massive monies from the tobacco settlements, which aren't even included in that $40 billion sum, have given them lots of capital.
The tobacco is not included in the in the $40 billion that she talked about. That's amazing. Well, you know, one of the things that happened to remind my audience of a specific small business issue that we reported on about a month ago on the show was a direct mailing piece that a group of young lawyers in California sent out to small business owners, threatening to sue them for something that they may or may not have been in violation of, and giving them the opportunity to settle if they'd settle like immediately for $25,000 or something, like I've forgotten the exact number, that they would actually they would prevent them from having to go to court. And some of these people did settle. They did send their money in, but some of them complained and protested this. And when they complained to the Bar Association, it actually was so over the top, even in California, that these guys were brought up before the Bar Association, and they lost their licenses. Some of them, I mean, they should have gone to jail, as far as I'm concerned. But this was nothing less than extortion, and these were all small businesses.
That's right. And what we find is increasingly some of the tactics regularly practiced by the trial bar resemble in other lines of business we'd call extortion. I mean, particularly in the mass tort or class action context, what you have happening is aggregations of thousands, millions of claims being brought against a business or businesses, and the business has to settle, because if they don't settle, they're risking bankruptcy because the size of the claim is so large. So that even if it's a very, very bad claim, unlikely to succeed on the merits, if these guys can string together lots of plaintiffs, they can make the dollar figure so big that any business owner is going to have to settle the claim. I mean, in Florida, a judge actually referred to a securities class action suit down there brought by the Milberg Weiss law firm, which is the dominant law firm in securities class actions here in New York and in San Diego, or the headquarters, referred to the action as resembling that of the squeegee boys that you used to see, like in New York, where the guys would come by and try to wipe your window, and then they'd break your window if you didn't give them money for the supposed service you'd never asked for.
Right.
And that's what we see happening over and over again in all aspects of this industry.
John, hold on to that thought. Folks, we're going to talk some more with Jim Copeland. I'll get his name right in a minute. With Jim Copeland, James R. Copeland, the director of Center for Legal Policy at the Manhattan Institute. And when we come back, I'm going to ask Jim to tell us what we can do about this. Are there some things that we can do to try to stop these guys from getting hold of our marketplace and from running some of us out of business? One of the things I want to ask you about is the silicone breast implant thing that happened recently, that whole debacle that cost a couple of companies their entire business. We'll talk about that right after these messages. It's 20 after. We're back. It's 23 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We'll be here with Jim Copeland, who's the director of the Center for Legal Policy at the Manhattan Institute. Jim, give us a little bit of an idea about what the Manhattan Institute is all about.
The Manhattan Institute for Policy Research was founded 25 years ago. It is a think tank in New York, founded really on individual choice and free market principles. And in the tort reform arena, we've been a leader on this since 1986, when what's now the Center for Legal Policy was founded. Our two senior fellows, Walter Olson and Peter Huber, the Washington Post called them the intellectual gurus of tort reform. They've each written three or more books on this topic, looking at the junk science. Peter Huber is particularly focused on the junk science in a lot of these cases. Walter Olson's focused a lot on the dangers inherent in the process when you've got state attorney generals and legislators and these trial lawyers all cooperating, and really a corrupt sort of bargain, so that the trial lawyers are running government without any check or balance on its power.
Jim, give us the website, please.
The website for Manhattan Institute is www.manhattan-institute.org. And you can reach the Center for Legal Policy there through a link, or you can type the same address and then put a /CLP, which will go to the Center for Legal Policy page in particular.
Did you say you also have a Trial Lawyers, Inc. website, though?
Yes, the Trial Lawyers, Inc. website is www.triallawyersinc.com. And that has a report people can download. It's got some news and some other links to our other studies. It links to our Manhattan Institute page, as well as Senior Fellow Walter Olson's overlawyer.com page, which is a regular sort of weblog on news, wacky lawsuits, things that are happening every day in our lawsuit culture that people may not be aware of.
Jim, one of the things I want quickly to point out, that you and I are not saying that we don't think that when people have claims, when they've been harmed, when something has happened, that they need a trial lawyer to represent them in court so that they can be redressed. We're not saying that people shouldn't have the right to do that. Obviously, we want people to be able to have that availability. We're not talking about any one particular law firm that's doing this. What my concern is that these guys are getting together and they're basically hunting in packs, aren't they?
That's right. I mean, obviously, there's a place for our tort law system. There are plenty of people with legitimate claims out there, but the system right now is structured such that it encourages lawsuits with low probabilities of success, frivolous types of lawsuits with large dollar signs. And there are a lot of people out there who are genuinely getting hurt, whose cases aren't even getting heard. What we see happening is a lot of what would be called in other parts of the private sector collusion. You see large mega law firms in the plaintiff side with lots of money cooperating together. You see a carving up of markets. And then you see disseminating down to smaller firms, you see cooperative efforts where you have, on ATLA's website, for instance, the American Trial Lawyers Association, litigation groups that law firms can join for a few thousand dollars. They get in there, they have deposition testimony, they have all sorts of motions prepared so that everything's ready for them to bring new lawsuits. The industry is just growing and growing, and they work together.
Jim, one of the things I wanted to point out is about 10 years ago, they went after the silicone breast implants. And you know, the truth is, I know some people who had those implants, and some women who had those implants, and I know some of them who had some problems, but now they're determining, but what I'm getting at is some of their problems were not necessarily because of the implant itself. Maybe it was just the procedure that was done. But now, apparently, silicone implants are okay after Dow Corning has gone out of business.
I mean, that's right. This is actually an issue that the Manhattan Institute's been on for about a decade. I mean, Peter Huber, our senior fellow, wrote on the junk science question, and in his Phantom Risks book that he co-edited, there was a piece on the silicone breast implants. We've published civil justice memos on this issue, specifically looking at the science out there. And the reality is that every empirical study that's been done in reputable scientific journals has found no statistically significant correlation between the silicone breast implants and the alleged major harms that are caused by the implants. Does that mean for sure that there's no harm? No, but what it means is that the best scientific evidence we've got doesn't show a harm. And so that's sufficient now that the Food and Drug Administration has come back out and said, well, yeah, you can have silicone breast implants again.
Well, the other thing, and we've only got about 30 seconds, Jim, the other thing is sometimes it seems to me that the money that comes in from these settlements, most of it doesn't go to the alleged victims, it goes to the lawyers.
That's right. The majority of the money in the tort system generally does not go to the claimants. Less than 25% goes to economic damages to compensate actual harms of plaintiffs. Another 20-25% goes to non-economic damages. The majority go to the attorneys at administrative costs.
Jim Copeland, thank you for being here. And we'll get you back on another day, and I want to talk about some things that we can do to try to prevent some of these things, like supporting tort reform. I'm sure you're interested in that, right?
That's exactly right.
Jim Copeland, ladies and gentlemen, James R. Copeland, the director of Center for Public for Legal Policy at the Manhattan Institute. Quick break. I'll be right back. Stay with me. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.